Welcome to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Here are your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lowell.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Back for another great episode. I'm your host, Jeff Carrier, and by my side is Seth Lull. And we are heading into the final stretch of the regular season, Seth, heading into week 9 of the fantasy and NFL regular season. And let's just jump right into it. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the players that we find are some good potential underneath the radar starts for this weekend. We're just going to kind of focus on some starts. They might be already on a little bit higher own percentage, so they might be more of a start situation. Some of them might be a little bit lower own, depending on your league, and they might be a streamer candidate. So no definitive category in terms of start or streamer, but they're kind of be one or the other, depending on your bench size and your league size, of course. But Seth, I wouldn't call this big news. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but we did, you know, as soon as the news came out, we did get hit up on Twitter. Should I be going to pick up this person? Everyone is kind of running to the waiver wire, snatching him up, putting him on the bottom of your bench, and that is Josh Gordon getting reinstated. Our thoughts on what you should do and how you handle Josh Gordon.
Yeah, I don't think much of him. I wouldn't pick him up. The guy hasn't played at all since 2014, so it's been 3 years. And if you remember back to, you know, when he played, because everybody knows he had the big season, I believe it was 2013, monster season for Josh Gordon, right? Or was that, yes, that was 2013. And then he comes back in 2014 where he had the suspension. He comes back and he was very, very average. Zero touchdowns in 2014. He played 5 games that year, 0 touchdowns. didn't do a whole lot. He was only over 100 yards once. So I just think, and it's been 3 years. So, and he plays for the Cleveland Browns. So you got to think about what's his upside. They don't have a quarterback. Not one player on the entire Browns roster, besides maybe Duke Johnson, has been somewhat valuable for fantasy. So it's hard for me to believe that Josh Gordon is going to step in after being away from the NFL for 3 years. Even though he is only 26 years old, he's still young. I just don't see him doing anything this season, especially considering they don't have a quarterback.
Yeah, it's always mind-boggling to me on how many times we have to re-talk about not only Josh Gordon, but these Cleveland players. Can people just come to the conclusion that we've been at for a while now? It was the same thing this whole offseason with Isaiah Crowell. Does everyone forget they play for Cleveland? Maybe if this was like Monday and... I mean, even though waiver doesn't go through, but maybe if the scenario was, hey, trade deadline's tomorrow, he just got reinstated, maybe they trade his rights somewhere else and he's got a sliver of a chance to play for a significantly improved team. Even then, to all your points, the guy hasn't played football. We saw what Marshawn Lynch has come back to after missing one season. We see it all the time. You know, he couldn't even come back last year when people were drafting him in the 6th round before having to get, you know, reinstated into for further help, you know, for health reasons. So it's a stay away situation. Do not drop anyone on your bench and just let everyone else, I guess, make that mistake in your league.
Yeah, completely agree. It just he's not worth it unless you have a really big bench size. In your league, and you can afford to roster him, you know, but very few people at this point in the year are in that situation with the bye weeks and everything. So,
yeah, stay away. The only area I'm going to, if it's a redraft league, I say there's no category of putting him on my team. Maybe if there's like if you're on a dynasty team and you can carry people over, you know, if you got a 15 spot bench dynasty team, that's the only area I would consider it. Because usually on those types of teams, you've got some pretty good trash sitting on your team because there's just nothing else to get. So I think in that scenario, you know, hey, go for it, but nothing else. All right, Seth, let's go ahead and get into our positional starts here. You're going to do the quarterbacks and running backs. I'm going to do wide receiver and tight ends. Why don't you kick us off with the quarterbacks?
Yeah, so, and again, we'll probably focus in two quarterback leagues because that's where it gets a little bit interesting. And I'm going to bring up one example. If you have, if you're in a two quarterback league and one of your quarterbacks is Andy Dalton, he probably has the worst matchup of all the quarterbacks this weekend. He's playing in Jacksonville. Andy Dalton has struggled just against anybody, really, especially on the road. You know, if you take out the game where he played against Cleveland, he's been very average. Single-digit fantasy points in Pittsburgh. He had that terrible game against Baltimore, even though it was at home week one. He's very sketchy. When he plays a good defense or somewhat good defense, you really can't start him. And he's going in Jacksonville playing arguably the best defense in all of football. So if you have Andy Dalton, you really can't afford to start him, especially if you get, you know, negative three for interceptions, or if you get negatives for sacks. I know a lot of leagues don't do that, but we're in a league, Jeff, that does. But either way, he has zero upside against Jacksonville. So you look at some quarterbacks that are available in free agents, and I don't love Brock Osweiler, but if he is the best available because you're in a two-quarterback league and no one is available, I think him, Andrew Stanton, I think both of those two are options that you could go to that are an upgrade at this point over Andy Dalton.
I guess, and if you're going as low as Brock Osweiler, that's basically saying any other quarterback not named Andy Dalton at that point, if you're saying Brock Osweiler.
Yeah, because and obviously, so Brett Hundley and Brissett, we're just operating under the assumption that neither of them are available. And we're in a couple leagues where Brock Osweiler is the only option. Every other quarterback is owned. And I'd be fine. I mean, Brock Osweiler was solid when he played with Denver before he left to go to Houston. And he's been in that system. He knows the offense. And they're playing a Philadelphia team that is that gives up a lot of points through the air. So, no, it's not ideal. But in Philadelphia, it's at least a good matchup. And you look at some of Trevor Siemian's woes, it seems like it's mental with Trevor Siemian. He was missing a lot of easy throws. He was throwing a lot of really bad interceptions. It's not like the receivers just aren't getting open. He did have to deal with a few drops. I know Benny Fowler dropped one in the end zone, an easy touchdown. So the separation is there for the Denver receivers. They still have a decent amount of talent. You still have DT, and it's a good matchup. So I think Brock Osweiler is a sneaky, and I don't even want to say sneaky because obviously you really hope you don't have to start him, but he's an upgrade over Andy Dalton.
Yep, I like it. Andy Dalton is a pretty much must-sit everywhere. I like the options there. What else you got?
So Jacoby Brissett is another player that I really like this week, and he has had an issue with turnovers. He's turned the ball over a lot, and in Indianapolis is anemic on offense, but he's been very, very solid, and he's playing a Houston team that just gave up over 400 passing yards to Russell Wilson. I mean, Houston's been banged up in the secondary. They obviously have them, no J.J. Watt, no Whitney Merciless. So they're and no Brian Cushing, but that's every single year with Houston. So their defense is very, very vulnerable. And Jacoby Brissett is somebody that's going to give you rushing yards. And I like him. I like him as a spot start. I'd probably put him ahead of Brock Osweiler, but he's owned in less leagues. He's actually only owned in 13% of leagues. So that, I think that takes into account one quarterback leagues too, though, right? So if you're in a two quarterback league, he's most likely not there, but if he is, or if you have him on your bench and you're usually starting Dalton, I think you have to pull the trigger and start Brissett over Dalton.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one. I think a lot of people are going to look at Indianapolis on the road and kind of shy away from it, but I think you bring up some good points in terms of being in a game script that's going to involve a lot of throwing. If you don't have a lot of negatives for bad plays, which is why we play in a fairly aggressive type of quarterback scoring, Seth, because we hate it when we see someone play really bad for 2-3 quarters, put their team from behind, and then get strictly yardage points, I guess, and it doesn't really reflect the fact that they had a fumble and two interceptions. But if you have a pretty standard scoring with negative one for interceptions in a lot of leagues with 4 points for touchdown. This over-under is actually a little bit higher than I thought, 49.5. Of course, they got Houston at double-digit, point spread over Indianapolis, but there could be something to this.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good one for a two-quarterback league. Okay. You know, and you and I know with these two quarterback leagues, it is slim pickings when it comes to quarterbacks.
Slim pickings. Okay, you have another quarterback, or are we on to running backs?
Let's get on to some running backs here.
Okay.
All right. So running backs is, you know, I want to say first that I want to try and stick to more of these under-the-radar running backs, but I think Doug Martin is a good example of a player that, you know, has been, you know, pretty average for most of the year, but love the matchup against New Orleans. Especially, you know, even if Jameis Winston plays, he re-aggravated a shoulder injury. If he plays, he's not 100%. If he doesn't play, yet Fitzpatrick, I think they're going to need to rely a little bit more on the run. I like the receivers in Tampa. I like the running backs, like everybody. I think it's going to be one of the highest scoring matchups of the weekend. Those matchups usually are when they're in New Orleans. So I like Doug Martin.
I really like Doug Martin. I mean, talk about his last few matchups, 18 and 20 carries, played Carolina and Buffalo and Arizona, and New England's no slouch to their run defense. He had a 4-week stretch when he came back from his suspension that, you know, it was not easy, and he still put up double-digit points almost every single week, 2 touchdowns. Now he gets to go up against New Orleans, the Jets, Miami, then Atlanta for the next few weeks. This is a good stretch for Doug Martin coming up, and definitely Week 9 here with Jameis Winston hurting, you could probably see Tampa Bay committing to the run game a little bit more.
Yep, my next running back is somebody way under the radar. Or, I mean, depending on the league you're in, maybe not. He's owned in 57% of leagues. Alex Collins coming off his best game of the season against Miami, 18 carries for 113 yards. He leads the NFL in yards per carries. And if you watch the game against Miami, he looked amazing. Every single run is an adventure with Alex Collins. And there's no Danny Woodhead back yet. Javorius Allen has been very underwhelming with the touches he's received, both the yards per carry and even his catches. He's getting like 3 or 4 yards per catch. So no big plays are coming from Javorius Allen. And the Baltimore coaching staff, John Harbaugh, they've talked about increasing his workload. So I like the fact that he's building momentum. It's definitely a tougher matchup against Tennessee. They've been one of the best teams in the NFL against the run, so I think this will be a big test for him. Tennessee has given up only 3.4 yards per carry. So I just think that Baltimore has nothing else. I see Alex Collins getting, you know, around 20 carries in this game. And if you're in a pinch and you have somebody on bye or you need to plug in a running back, you could do worse than putting in a running back who's hot, who is going to be getting 15 to 20 carries. I think there's a decent floor there.
Yeah, I like the matchup to a point. I don't think it's necessarily like, you know, a negative matchup like playing Jacksonville or something like that. I get, you know, a little bit weary after, especially after a game where Baltimore is such a commanding lead that they can go ahead and just completely, you know, just keep handing it off against a team like Miami that just did not show up for an entire game. But he has looked good when he has touched the ball. So as long as Baltimore can stay in the game, which at this point, in terms of the type of team that they have, talent, quarterback, they're going to have to rely more on the running game to try and shorten the game and keep themselves in it. The only downside, obviously, with Collins is that he literally doesn't catch any passes. So if you aren't a PPR league, hurts him a little bit. Definitely a boost, though, for standard leagues.
Yeah, and I got kind of a wild card. I'd be very skeptical on starting this guy. You probably can't start him, but one running back that I think is maybe more of a play in daily if you're, you know, for DraftKings. But I kind of like Devontae Booker this week. He has 10 catches in his last 3 weeks, so he's been the most consistent pass catcher out of all the Denver running backs. They made the switch to quarterback with Brock Osweiler. So maybe Devontae Booker is more so somebody that you pick up and maybe keep on your bench for a week to see how he plays. And I know we're talking about running backs to be like this week, but I think there is some upside there. Philadelphia has been really stout against the run. I don't think Denver is going to be able to have much success at all running the football. And I like Devontae Booker as an option out of the backfield. I think he's going to catch 3 to 4 passes at least. And I think that's the way that you have to attack Philadelphia through the air. So what are your thoughts on Devontae Booker as kind of like an under-the-radar sleeper?
So I'm looking up kind of his snaps here because, you know, that's kind of my little go-to there. And I was like, well, at first I'm like, well, doesn't C.J. Anderson touch the ball the more?
The more?
But more, I guess. I don't know. 19 out of his 25 snaps he played were passing snaps. So you're absolutely right. If Denver falls behind in the score, or if they can't run the ball, they're going to have to revert to more of the passing game, which they did use Devontae Booker a little bit more, it seemed like, than any of the other running backs. CJ Anderson was still heavily involved in the game as well, but Devontae Booker was primarily used when he did come in through the passing game. So I think that could be a good find by you there, and definitely underneath the radar, definitely a little bit lower end, and definitely for a little bit more deeper teams.
Yep.
Okay, so let's move on to wide receivers here. I've got three wide receivers and two tight ends, and just like Seth's, mine are definitely underneath the radar as well. Try not to go too chalky, although this one is going to seem maybe a little chalky, but it's Devin Funchess. Carolina playing Atlanta. They have no more Kelvin Benjamin. They're at home. I don't know how the passing game is going to change. I don't know how they're going to use Christian McCaffrey different, or if they're just going to try and move it the same, except that Devin Funchess is now going to act as the one. You know, it's really tough to say until it happens, but you would have to figure that in terms of a traditional outside wide receiver, Devin Funchess projects to be their best one to get the most volume. You know, if Atlanta can put together a game where they actually force Carolina to score, that proves well for Devin Funchess. So I think that he's a must start this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, he's ranked pretty low. If you look at, if you sort by projections and look at projected fantasy points and you go through all the receivers, he's really low on this list. And I'm looking at a few. I agree with you. I love Devin Funchess this weekend. I mean, you look at some of these receivers that are ranked ahead of him that I like Funchess more than. Like Devontae Parker, I'd rather start Funchess. Amari Cooper, I'm probably starting Funchess. Both have been very average the past. Well, Amari Cooper had that one big game against KC, but I'm probably starting Funchess over Cooper. I like Funchess more than Sterling Shepard. You know, I like him more than Alshon Jeffrey against Denver. You know, I think that there's a lot of receivers in here that I like Funchess more than. I like him more than Emmanuel Sanders, who's been banged up. So I don't know. You are you with me on those? I think just to give our listeners kind of an idea of how much we like him and who we would start him over.
Some of them. Maybe not every single one of those, but in that general range, which I think does help put into perspective how much we like him. And
yeah.
So my next one is I really like, and sometimes some of these are, I like the matchup, and I think someone's going to do good from the wide receivers. But you know how it is, Seth. Like, you're not too sure if it's the second or the third wide receiver that goes off. But I'm going to choose Cooper Kupp. Regardless, I like the Rams against the Giants this week. The Giants are going to be without Janoris Jenkins, suspended by the team for violating rules. I think he showed up late coming back off their bye week. You know, typical Janoris Jenkins kind of move. I don't know if it's going to be Cooper Kupp. He's probably the best option there. I'm playing Sammy Watkins in a league, so if it happens to be Sammy Watkins, I'm going to absolutely tear my hair out because he's caught five passes in like the last 3 or 4 weeks. So I think that it would be Cooper Kupp. So my choice here is Cooper Kupp. I like the matchup. They're coming off of a bye, and I wouldn't say that their run defense is necessarily great in the Giants. But they're definitely a more of a funnel defense as well, where they funnel passes to the middle of the field. And Cooper Kupp plays a lot from the slot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't love it. It would be hard for me to imagine a scenario where I would be starting Cooper Kupp. I like Robert Woods better than him. You know, I think Robert Woods, 5 catches or more in 4 of his last 5 games. He seems like he's going to be consistently getting a higher floor. Like, you know a little bit more what to expect with Robert Woods. He hasn't had a touchdown yet this year, but, you know, you take away the touchdowns from Cooper Kupp, which are equally as, I guess, fluky. I don't know. I think I would lean more towards Robert Woods. It's close, but I don't really know. You have to be in a really deep league or have a lot of people on bye and injured to be starting Cooper Kupp. So I don't like that one as much.
Yeah, and I think maybe it is Robert Woods. So, I mean, I can go with you on that one, too. Again, I like this matchup, and I don't know if it's Cooper Kupp, I don't know if it's Robert Woods. Let's just put both of them there for the sake of this argument, because I was trying to identify more of a matchup. And that's the same thing with my next one as well. I really like this matchup. It's Dallas against Kansas City. Dallas without Ezekiel Elliott. We've seen Dallas, even against good running games, still carve out a very big role for Zeke, especially when they get towards a goal line. Well, I assure you this, that when it comes down to goal line, especially when they're like 3-4 yards out, Alfred Morris is not going to find his way into the end zone. It's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. Nope. So without choosing Dez, because it's kind of an obvious choice, and I like Dez this weekend, Kansas City has given up lots of points. We saw what happened against when Antonio Brown, and of course Houston off against them. So I like the other receivers in Dallas. So I'm going to go with Terrence Williams on the outside for a little bit more of a big play potential. Again, I don't know if it's going to be him or Cole Beasley, but we've seen Terrence Williams have a little bit more big play potential. So I'm going with Terrence Williams.
Yeah, I'm with you on that game. I like Cole Beasley more. I think, I don't know, maybe this is reading too much into things, but not having Zeke, not having somebody to consistently move the chains for them, I like Cole Beasley as kind of being part of their running game, you know, in the way that New England over the years has used their receivers. You know, those short passes to Cole Beasley and move the chains. KC's secondary has been terrible. Their slot corner in particular, like, they're not good at covering slot receivers. So, and I just think that's going to be an easier play for Dak Prescott more often than not. It's going to be easier for him to get the ball to Cole Beasley rather than connecting with Terrence Williams and depending on that big play. So I like all of them. But if I had to pick one, I think I would lean more towards Cole Beasley.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a pretty good, I guess, analysis in terms of without Zeke, they're going to need more of that screen short passing. So could be Cole Beasley there. So I think that we both like the matchup. It could be, you know, Williams or Beasley, Kupp or Woods. Really tough to project. You know, it's really going to come down to, hey, who can catch that touchdown that usually makes a difference. But either way, if you can get a piece of those matchups we like. And my tight end actually is similar matchups or the exact same matchups that I just talked about with wide receiver. So a little bit of a cop-out, but you know, their tight ends are underneath the radar, so that's what I wanted to focus on. Ed Dixon, again, I think that without Kelvin Benjamin, keeping Devin Funchess on the outside, Ed Dixon's going to be play a little bit more of a role. You know, it's still Ed Dixon. It's still Carolina. We still need to, you know, temper expectations, but anytime you lose your number one weapon, the pass distribution is going to change.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I don't mind that at all. I think at tight end, you're kind of throwing stuff at the wall and hoping something sticks. So, yep. You know, you can make a move like that. And if he gets 2 or 3 points, you know, it's a tight end. You know that there's that possibility. So I like it.
Yeah, and the last tight end I have is the Rams tight end. And I know this sounds really ugly because they haven't been very consistent at tight end, but I'm going back to matchup. The Giants are one of the worst teams at giving up points to the tight end. In fact, they are number one at giving up points to the tight end. It's a little bit trickier here because the Rams utilize a few different tight ends. The tight end that gets the most snaps is Tyler Higbee. So I'm going to go with him, even though Gerald Everett's a little bit more of a versatile vertical threat, a little bit bigger play guy, but he gets less snaps than Tyler Higbee. So a funnel defense again, even though they don't have Janoris Jenkins, I could see a pretty decent passing game out of Jared Goff. I know that I believe that they're on the road, but kind of tricky, but Rams tight end, Tyler Higbee.
Don't love it. We talked about Dixon, and I think we just talked about how, you really can't go wrong if you're in a position where you have to stream tight ends and you're choosing between the likes of Ed Dixon or, you know, any of Higbee or any of the Rams or, you know, something like Austin Hooper or any of these guys, like you're in a bad position. So you can't really go too wrong taking a swing at someone like that. I just don't love it. I would hope that you're in a little bit better position, but I don't know. I just don't like it.
Yeah, it's definitely tough. And, you know, when I'm trying, and I hated that I chose when we were doing this too, that I was like, okay, I'll take wide receiver and tight end. Then I start looking at tight end. I'm like, this is atrocious. I need to find a starting tight end and then keep him somewhat underneath the radar. Maybe I could have gone a little bit, a bigger name. Didn't like it. And, you know, I got to take off the, you know, Buffalo jet ski, and it's going to be on Thursday night as well. So, it's definitely a shot in the dark, but that one was purely on matchup in terms of tight ends and how the Giants cover them.
Yeah, and, you know, I do think there's going to be scoring in that game. The Giants are an absolute mess, so I don't think it's a bad option. I just, you know, we talked about Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. You like both of them. I at least like Robert Woods. You like the tight end. Yeah, I can't imagine that. You know, they've been a very efficient offense. They haven't been an offense that's really aired it out a ton. Todd Gurley does a lot of the damage, both on the ground and through the air, and a lot of the offense goes through him. So, yeah, I don't love it, but you know, if you're in that situation, I couldn't blame you for taking a stab at a move like that.
Yeah, and as we kind of wrap up here, Seth, I wanted to talk quickly on how aggressive maybe you should or shouldn't be, at what stage of aggressiveness, you know, depending on what your record is. So we're heading into week 9, and so we still have 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13. That's 5 full weeks. I still feel like that's a good amount of time in the regular season to really dramatically change what your record is, what your playoff standing is. Give our listeners an idea in terms of if your record is 3-6, 4-4, you know, something along those lines, 3-5, 4-4. When do you start pushing the absolute panic button? Because I think everyone doesn't want to make a move that's going to hurt their team, yet they still need to make sure that they're trying to win each week.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be full panic mode. I mean, I'm in a couple leagues where, you know, I'm like a game or two out of the final playoff spot. And at this stage in the game, I'm not pushing the panic button yet. You look at the fantasy season, most people have till week 13. Part of it's looking ahead in your schedule. If you have a really brutal schedule and you're 2 games out of the last playoff spot, then I'm getting close to pushing the panic button, at least to the point where you have to win this week. You have to get the ball rolling in the right direction. But there's still 5 weeks left of the fantasy regular season for most leagues. So you have to be in a position where, you know, I'd say if you're 3 games out of the final playoff spot, you're in complete panic mode because you don't control your own destiny, number one, and you basically need to win 4 out of the final 5 games just to give yourself like a remote chance at getting the playoffs. If you're 2 games out of the final playoff spot and you have a semi-tough schedule, I'm not full-out panic, but I'm going to start moving in the direction of making moves that help me in the short term. Now, that doesn't mean you give up Antonio Brown because he's on a bye to acquire someone like a Paul Richardson who just had a really big week. You don't do that. But if all things are close to equal, you err on the side of which player can help you in the short term. If you're 1 game out of the last playoff spot and you're in the mix, I'm not panicking at all. I think a lot of it comes down to look at your schedule. You know, you and I do this for our league, so we look ahead. Who I play week 9? Who I play week 10? I look at, you know, how their teams are looking. You know, are they trending up, trending down? And if I have, like, I know in one league I'm in, I'm a game out of the last playoff spot, but I'm playing a bunch of beatable teams. I'm playing, you know, the other division that's a lot weaker. So I'm not worried at all because I am confident that I can pick up some wins towards the end of the season. So I think it really just depends on your league, your win-loss record, how many games you are out of the last playoff spot, and what your schedule looks like moving forward. And also how your team is trending. If your team has been getting unlucky, you're scoring a lot of points consistently every week, I'm not as worried because eventually you'd have to think that your team is – you're going to come up with some W's. If your team has been putting up points and you're not playing well, then that's a different story.
Well said. And I think next week will be a good time to talk a little bit about that actual, you know, that playoff schedule. What are we targeting? What are we shooting for? Maybe some final trades, as basically everyone should be having their trade deadlines coming up, you know, if they haven't already had them already. So, you know, it's getting towards that part of the season, but there's still 5 weeks. You could be 3-5 right now and still end up 8-5. You know, that whole adage, if you did finish the season, which we've all seen happen plenty of times before. Seth, you and I were in a league last year where someone else started 5-0, you know, pretty much almost locked to make the playoffs, and they go ahead and lose 7 out of their last 8. So you got to stay on top of it, and I think everyone who is still listening to this show now in November is doing exactly that, and hopefully we're all having the same success. So thanks, everyone, for listening. We are the NFL Talking Heads, and we will be back next week.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Try saying that 3 times fast. With your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lull. We'll catch you next time.